Friday, August 21st, 2020, and the time is 8:30 a.m. Can I confirm that Larry Long and Hector Cerna are on the line?
This is Larry Long. I'm present.
And this is Hector Cerna as well.
Okay. We have a quorum of the Audit Committee. I now call this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. If there is anyone wishing to address the Commission, you will need to use the webinar platform in order to be recognized. You must use the raise your hand feature on your screen and submit the agenda item you wish to comment on using the question feature. Public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and agenda items are 10 minutes. If there is a request for public comment, please ask the person to give you the following information for the record: full name, their occupation, profession, or business, who they're representing, and if comment is on a rule, the audience member must state if they are for or against the subject. Okay, I'm going to move to the agenda items now. And the first order of business is the approval of the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on June 19th, 2020. These minutes were circulated to the members in the agenda packet. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on June 19th, 2020?
This is Larry. I make a motion.
Okay, Larry?
Second?
Okay, Hector? Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Okay, next we review the agency's activity, and we'll start with Commissioner Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. SML's activity report for audit starts on page 5. There are two audits to update you on. The first is the internal audit of records management. There were no findings or recommendations. There were two observations, which we have completed, and you will hear more detail from the internal auditors later in this agenda. The other audit is the SORM audit. The field work took place on the 18th. We received the report late yesterday, so we will have it in the package for October so you can see the full report. However, I will let you know there were no findings or recommendations. But again, you'll see the full detail in October. And with that, unless there are any questions, that would conclude my report.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner report on status of agency activities and outstanding findings and recommendations is on page 6. And we have two audit areas to report to you. Both of these are new from the prior meeting. The first one pertains to the records management audit, internal audit performed by Garza Gonzalez and Associates. You'll hear more about that later. There were one recommendation, one observation, but both of those items are pending, and we have an implementation date for October 1st, but I'll wait and let you hear more about that when the report is provided. And then the second area was the State Office of Risk Management and their risk management program review. And I believe we talked about this briefly at the last meeting, but it just received the report, and the report is now provided to you. It begins on page 7. There were three recommendations. I feel fairly minor. We have implemented all of those. We were able to implement those really right about the time the report was being issued, and we just kind of crossed paths. I think we had them implemented about when they were sending the report, but they occurred. Those recommendations were implemented, so those are complete. And we have nothing pending at the moment that we know of.
Okay. Any questions for Commissioner Pettijohn? Okay. Commissioner Cooper?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Texas Department of Banking report starts on page 13. The first three items are going to be reviewed by Garza later on, so I will not go over those. On page 14, the the external network penetration test and web application vulnerability scan that was conducted. We have an action plan in place to remediate any of the recommendations or findings, and the expected completion date is August 31, so just in a few days. That's all I have.
Okay. Any questions or comments for any of the activities? Okay, next we have discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's 2020 third quarter investment officer report. Commissioner Jones, you want to go through?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The investment officer report is on page 15. It states where we are with regard to investments, and investment officer Antonia Antoff stands ready to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll go on to Commissioner Pettijohn.
Molly, I've got a question. This is Larry.
Okay.
I just wanted to, ask Antonia about the, you know, what jumps out there is the, you know, it's a three-month period in the, the overnight repurchase agreements. I don't know if this is the right place to get into it, but I'd like to just understand, you know, when they're paying nothing like that, if we have the option, I know they're under the Texas Treasury Safekeeping Trust, but is there an option to do anything else with that money during that time to earn some sort of interest on it?
This is Antonia Antoff, Director of Administration and Finance, Savings and Mortgage Lending. Technically, we can, yes. According to the requirements of our investment policy, we are allowed to invest elsewhere. This is kind of new situation in the last few months that there has been no interest paid. Before COVID started and the interest rate fell so low, trust was paying the same rates, if not higher, than our CDs. So it was kind of an even ground which one we're going to pick. So this is kind of new. We haven't reevaluated what we should do, but the existing CDs that we have, we keep renewing because obviously they pay higher interest.
On those repurchase agreements, are those decisions, are we pretty flexible on that? Can those decisions be made like day to day or week to week? Because those are real short term.
Yeah, these repurchase agreements are the funds that are held in Safekeeping Trust, which is the comptroller's office manages those money, and they're the ones to pick whether to put them in overnight agreements or not.
Okay.
But we absolutely, we can decide to do something else with the money.
You know, and this is...
Go ahead. I was just going to say, so the question is, what's the rate on three-month money if you went to one of your savings banks?
Well, every time a CD comes up for renewal, I check the rates. But the one that we just recently renewed in April is paying for two years, 1.2%. This obviously is higher than nothing of what trust pays.
All right. So should we be moving some of the $3 million into something? And I can't even believe I'm saying this because we had such a deal about the fact that they were all the same a couple months ago, but should we be going out like what's 3 months money, 6 months money, you know, that sort of thing? Because I think you're going to see this low rate environment. Not that I have a crystal ball, but you know, we're going to be at this level, I think, for at least another year, if not longer.
Yeah, we will evaluate, and we can certainly do some of that. Yes.
Molly, this is Hector Sevna. It's about 10 times as much, which is only 0.25 or so for 90 days, but it can range from 0.1 to 0.3, perhaps, from the survey that we did recently.
You know, my point is it's a significant amount of money, and it should be earning something. You know, it's got value somewhere to earn some. I just didn't know. I need to get up. I want to get up to speed on that a little bit more, but... you know, that's a significant amount to be earning nothing there over a 3 month period.
Agreed.
Okay.
So, Antonio, I guess the takeaway is to re, you know, analyze that and figure out maybe is there a ladder that you can get higher rates.
Yes, I understand. Will do.
Okay, great. All right. Good comment, Larry. Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Office of the Consumer Credit Commissioner Investment Officer reports are on page 16 and 17. And first of all, I wanted to make you aware that we have a new investment officer. This will also be reflected in the investment policies, but Moran Diamond has assumed the responsibilities as the Director of Licensing and Finance. So she's now over Finance and Accounting, and so she'll be assuming the role of Investment Officer. So you'll be hearing from her in the future. I'm going to go ahead and take it today, but in the future, you'll be hearing from her on the Investment Officer report. If you look at page 16, this is our very small residential mortgage loan originator recovery trust fund. That's just normal activity in that particular fund for the third quarter. Moving on to page 17, this is the financial education endowment. And really, there's just been two primary, you know, activities you can note. First of all, we've had some grant disbursements during the third quarter, which is normal and expected, and that's positive. Also, obviously, you know, it was not a very good quarter investment-wise, and so there is some diminution of value in the invested portfolio, but, you know, that continues to be an item. You know, fourth quarter is probably looking a little better, and that's an item that, you know, certainly we continue to monitor. The trust has done significant work in the past about trying to make sure that we sort of protect the downside, so to speak, on the volatility. So I think it's better than it could have been prior to some of the previous positions that they used to take. So I think, you know, it's as good as we can hope for the time being. Fourth quarter, kind of following up on the prior discussion, we'll be seeing fourth quarters, there's going to be a transfer of excess cash into the invested portfolio. Again, we'll be seeking, while we want to always maintain, we have policies that maintain a level of cash that's appropriate and significant in preserving our principal, but we want to try to invest, you know, it's time for us to do another investment installment into that invested portfolio. So we'll be looking at that. So you'll see the total balance is just under $8 million as of the end of the third quarter. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So you might go into this fund is all managed, and it's set forth to be managed by the state, right?
It's managed by the Texas Treasury Safekeeping Trust. The endowment is one of the, they have a very large endowment portfolio that has about a dozen particular funds that sort of participate in that endowment portfolio. Many of them are very, very large. For example, like the Tobacco Settlement Fund, the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund is just a tiny piece of that, but that allows us a lot of benefits to be able to participate in that endowment portfolio. And we usually have, for some of the new members, we have the Safekeeping Trust. The representatives from that organization come, the investment officer comes in and presents to the Finance Commission and February of every other year and provides more detail, but we can always get that for you if you want more information about the asset diversification and the portfolio allocation performance and those kinds of that kind of information. We can always provide additional information about that.
So Commissioner Pettijohn, this is Larry. Is it my understanding we have an investment policy and then we hand that over to them and then they are making these decisions about where the money's invested. Do you have any say in that, you or your staff?
No, we do not. They handle that as part of the total. They have an investment board, and they handle all of that as part of the endowment portfolio. Again, this is just a tiny piece of a much larger endowment portfolio.
Okay, this is something I think we really need to keep our eye on. You know, I know I read through the policy and everything, but just looking at some of these numbers, and I know the period we've been in, but I guess we're just going to, keep our eye on that. And again, I think I need to understand it a little bit better, and I will. I'll do the due diligence on my end to understand exactly the mechanism of how, who's in charge and how the decisions are made on that. But kind of jump out at you when you look at these returns.
I can provide you with some additional resources from the presentation they gave recently, and provide some other resources if you'd like me to provide that on the.
I think I would. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. If there's no other questions, Commissioner Cooper.
Department of Banking's reports first start on page 18. That is the seized funds, and as of this date, we do not have any seized funds. On page 19 would be the trust-funded prepaid funeral guarantee fund. The obviously the balance is there in the ending balance. The biggest activity under deductions for $103,000 composes a restitution that were made to 60 consumers after a payment related to the Hernandez funeral home, which we have reported on previously. And then it has, we have roughly three CDs, a little over half of the amount, the rest in safekeeping, and we've noted the comments that were made earlier. On page 20 would be the insurance-funded prepaid funeral guarantee fund, $649,000, and the biggest addition is $69,000, and that represents the assessments collected from the permit holders. And if for the members, if y'all can remember, they are assessed $1 a contract basically annually until the fund reaches $1 million. So we still have a little way to go. And that,
okay.
Any questions on that? That's all we have.
Okay, hearing none, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2020 third quarter investment officer report?
This is Hector Sadler, so moved.
Okay, Hector, is there a second?
I'll second, this is Larry.
Okay, Larry, any further discussion? Okay, all in favor of the motion, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Hearing no opposed, the ayes have it, and the motion passes. Next, we have the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the readoption of the investment policies for the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, Officer of Consumer Credit, and Texas Department of Banking. Are there any questions on any of those policies and the changes that have been made? Okay, hearing none. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the readoption of the investment policies for the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, Officer of Consumer Credit Commissioner, and Texas Department of Banking? I'll make the motion.
Okay.
Okay, Larry, you made the motion. I'll second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Okay. Hearing none opposed, the ayes have it, and the motion passes. Next, we have the discussion. Go ahead.
This is Leslie. I just wanted to also mention, I think you probably noticed, but each of the agencies have provided a report on their compliance with the training requirements, and that's at the appended to each of those investment policies. So just a note for make sure we covered that.
Okay. We don't need any motion on that, do we?
No, you do not.
No.
Okay. All right. All right. Next, we have the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agenda's 2020 third quarter financial statement. Commissioner Jones, what page is that starting on?
Yes, we start on, SML starts on page 75.
All right.
And Antonio will present the financial.
Antonio Antoff, Savings and Mortgage Lending. As Commissioner Jones pointed out, our financials start on page 75. This is our third quarter financials as of May 31. Our overall revenues are 12.6% over budget. We have, I have pointed out the variances on the following page 76. And the only thing I wanted to mention is that we are noticing our increased licensing activity in the fourth quarter. So at the end of the third quarter, our licensing revenues are at 12.8% over, and this trend will continue throughout the fourth quarter. The mortgage industry is doing well. We're seeing a lot of licensing activity. And unless you have any questions on the financials, our liquidity report is on page 77. We are currently at 8.4 months of reserves, and compared to the 8.9 months in the second quarter, we expect at the end of the fourth quarter to be around 7 months of reserves. And I'll be happy to check
with the. Well, and you expect with the budget that next year you'll be within compliance of being six, correct?
That is our expectation, yes. And we're going to talk about the budget later, but that is our expectation, yes.
That's where we try to keep it within 6 months on an ongoing basis. Is that correct?
Yes, we have a policy. Finance Commission has a liquidity policy that sets that requirement at 6 months.
So the requirement is not to exceed 6 months, and if you do, to have a plan to get in compliance with the 6 months or less.
That was my follow-up. Okay, is that right, Molly? Is that if they're out of compliance, then there's work to get back within compliance? Is that the way it works?
Right, there's a plan to get back within compliance, and that's what Antonio was talking about, that by the end of the year, they should be at 7, and then the budget, when we get to the budget, you'll see that there's more expenses than revenue projected, and yeah. That action would bring them back into the 6 months or less.
Yeah, okay, we can talk about it. All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, Cooper here, just to follow up on Larry's question, the policy actually states between 2 to 6 months.
Okay, great.
Thanks. 2 to 6 months.
Thank you.
And this is Leslie. I'll add one more clarification of that, is that the plan is required when you have four consecutive quarters that exceed 6 months. There will be some seasonal variations in an agency's collection activities and spending activities that may cause it to go over, but it may be a seasonal type issue, so it requires four consecutive quarters before the plan is triggered.
And this is Caroline. For example, for SML, all of our licensees, all roughly 30,000, are required to renew their license between November 1 and December 31st. So that is a period of very heavy revenue from the mortgage industry. And you will also, we'll talk during budget about something we're proposing in order to manage that for next fiscal year. But that is definitely a time when we see a lot of increase in fees from the mortgage industry.
Very helpful comments. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Next, we have Commissioner Pettijohn. You want to go through yours?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So our report is on page 78 and 79. 78 is the operating statement for the third quarter, and 79 is the budget variances narrative. So So the first item we're going to cover is revenues, and you'll see that our revenues are sitting at 98.5% of our year-to-date budget, so we're pretty pleased with the revenue projections being in line with where we currently stand. Expenditures, on the other hand, are sitting at 87% of budget, and that's primarily due to COVID-19, really. We've had some additional additional vacancies and things. Salary and wages is one of those big categories. We're at 91% of the projected budget, and that's really due to vacancies and delays and filling vacancies during the pandemic. Our travel expenditures have been hit extremely hard. Those are running at about 69% of the year-to-date budget. We've had it, we've had to suspend travel for the most part. We've had extremely limited travel for our financial examiners. So it's a huge part of what we do in performing examinations, and that's really due to COVID-19. So those are the primary reasons. I mean, there's some other things in there, but those are the high points in terms of the third quarter financial statement. And then if you want to turn to page 80 for our liquidity report and continuing with this discussion, you'll see the months of operating are at 6.8. Our normal projection had been for this number to be under 6. And really the third quarter with our seasonal collections and such, it usually is under 6 months. This is the first May quarter in recent memory that it's been this high, but it's because of some of those comments I just made on the operating statement. But for COVID-19, this number would be below 6 months. This is our fourth quarter consecutively in excess of 6, so it's on the high side that we were not not anticipating. However, we've been making some changes this year, and our whole budget was predicated upon the deferral of the motor vehicle sales finance renewal into the first from the fourth quarter of FY20 into the first quarter of 21. So normally in the fourth quarter, we would have gotten a very significant amount of our revenue. And we made a deliberate change. The Finance Commission was participating in that through rulemaking. It was part of our budget process that we pushed those renewals into the first quarter. It really just helps overall with managing the budget. Plus, it also gave some relief for the industry to be able to extend that out. So that's going to result in an overall, if you look at the projected initial projected budget, there was a fairly significant deficit that was projected for fiscal year 20. So we're going to see that revenue decrease, but perhaps not quite as great. Well, the revenue is going to come in line with about what we expected, but the net is going to be maybe a lot less than we expected. It's going to be more than that's hard to say because it's a negative number. But anyways, it's not going to be as great as expected because we've reduced expenses so much because of COVID. But still, we estimate that our reserve at the end of August is going to be approximately 5 months. So it should come into line just almost immediately, and then we can talk budget about future expectations beyond that. So that's our expectation with the fourth quarter. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioner Pettijohn, this is Larry, and in looking through this budget, trying to notice variances and so forth, and is the pawn activity, is that something that happens from year to year? And I know that y'all make a comment on it, that the renewals begin. Is that something that was different or abnormal this year? And that's the reason the variance in the budget is showing up like it is?
It's not really unusual for this year. I think renewal may have opened just a little bit later in May than normal. It probably has more to do, I'd have to go back and check how the allocation of the year-to-date budget might have been.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of
I think it might not have been aligned more seasonally as we would expect that revenue to come in. And so I think that's really, it's really a timing difference because, we've now completed the pawn renewal, so that number's going to move right into line in the fourth quarter, but
I knew it was. Thank you for that. I knew it was, and you said it was coming out. I wanted to understand kind of the budgeting process and how it was such a variance here at the end of May.
Yeah, I know in the past we've tried to align those more seasonally, but this one may have gotten off this past quarter, but I just have to go back and check. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, any other comments for Commissioner Pettijohn? Hearing none, Commissioner Cooper?
Department of Bankage report starts on 81, and I'd like to ask Sammy Chadley, our Director of Administrative Services, to provide the detail. Sammy?
Yes. Good morning. Sammy Chadley, Department of Banking. On page 81 is our operating statement for quarter ending May 31st, 2020. Our actual revenues are at 94.2% of budget, while our expenditures are at 86.5% of budget. On page 82 are our variance explanations. I'm going to go over a couple of items. The first item is on the revenue side. Under non-depository supervision, we have a variance for the quarter that is related to assessment reductions due to the higher collection of penalties that were not anticipated. Second, the miscellaneous revenues, there's a variance there. We basically collected less than what we expected as our repo rates are very low, close to zero. Next, our in-state and out-of-state travel, our expenditures are very low compared to what was budgeted, and that was obviously due to COVID-19. And lastly, on their consumables, we have a negative variance, and that is mainly due to our acquisition of PPE, personal protective equipment, for staff here in headquarters and regional offices. Are there any questions so far? Okay. On page 83, I'm sorry, go ahead. No? Okay.
No, I said no. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
On page 83 is our liquidity report, and we basically show our unreserved cash at 3.69 months. We expect that unreserved cash to be within 2.4 to 2.5 months by the fourth quarter. Any questions? Okay.
No, for me.
Sure.
All right, great, thanks. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2020 third quarter financial statements?
So moved. This is Sector 7.
Okay, Hector? Is there a second?
Yes, Chairman, I'll second.
Okay, Larry, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it, and the motion passes. Next, we're going to have a discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's fiscal year 2021 operating budget. To start off, I'd like to say that many of us attended the open budget hearing on August 11th, and I want to congratulate the commissioners. Everyone did a great job. We received a lot of support from the trade groups, and everybody indicated that they were in favor of the budget. That being said, Commissioner Jones, can you take us through the SML budget for 2021?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. What I'd like to do before Antonio presents detail on the budget is to give you some of the general approaches that we took in preparing the proposed budget and some fundamentals to this budget. First was being good and prudent stewards of our finances, as we always prioritize that. We recognize that being self-directed and semi-independent is a privilege, and we made the budget with that being top of mind. We are also self-leveling, self-funding, so each division, thrift and mortgage, have to support its own costs of regulation, and that remains true under next year's proposed budget. With regard to thrift, we drafted the budget in compliance with Sunset's recommendation to the Finance Commission that assessments be charged at and paid in equal installments. And we analyzed opportunities to improve business processes overall and achieve additional efficiencies where possible. We took into consideration any impact from COVID over the next year potentially, and we looked for opportunities to lower fees and assessments for the industry, while at the same time making sure that we have the staff and the infrastructure needed to continue being an effective and efficient regulator. An additional impact of lowering of fees and assessments is to assess and assist in managing the cash reserves, as we talked about earlier. On the thrift side, in March, Texas had two very large financial institutions convert from National Bank to Texas Savings Bank. Our current staff's done a great job of starting a large financial institution program, or an LFI program, while at the same time continuing to provide the same responsiveness and accessibility to our legacy portfolio that they are accustomed to. We do need more examiners on the thrift side and additional infrastructure for that LFI program, and that is reflected in the budget. We have also seen, and we spoke some about this a few moments ago on the mortgage side, we have seen an increase in the number of mortgage license applications, which then increases the revenue from the mortgage industry. So we are proposing to decrease most of the licensing fees in order to first give a benefit to the industry and also assist in the cash reserves. Those are the general objectives we had in mind when we drafted the budget. There is a letter from IBAT as with a letter of support in the materials. We also received a letter of support from TBA and from Texas Mortgage Bankers Association. Before I turn it over to Antonia, I want to acknowledge the work that goes into preparing SML's budget. We recognize the enormous responsibility we have to be good and prudent stewards of the department's finances. So we prepared a budget that allows us to live out that responsibility. And when I say we, it's a team effort. Each of the directors gives input and insight into what they see the needs of their division to be and what potential revenue is expected. And then Antonia spends countless hours putting those pieces together, having further discussions with all of us, and then helping us determine what that budget should look like for the department as a whole. So I want to thank all SML who were involved in this process, particularly Antonia, and I will now call on her to present the details of the proposed budget.
Thank you, Commissioner. Antonia Antos, Savings and Mortgage Lending. Our budget information starts on page 84, it's also on 85. The proposed budget for fiscal year 21 provides for 20.7% increase in revenues and 22.9% increase of expenditures compared to the budget approved for fiscal year 2020. The proposed staff count for fiscal year 21 is 67, 9 more than approved in the previous year. For the licensing revenues, we're budgeting 6.8% higher than prior budget due to an increase in our individual residential mortgage loan originator licensing activity. In fiscal year 2020, lower than budgeted expenditures for travel and other categories due to COVID-19 pandemic, coupled with high volume license activity, resulted in excess funds for the department. In an effort to stay compliant with the self-leveling, self-funding statutory requirements and the requirements of the Finance Commission's liquidity policy, we are proposing reductions of multiple licensing fees for fiscal year 2021. The fee for new mortgage banker and mortgage servicer registration is decreased 14% from 350 to 300, and the renewal for the same registration decreased 16.7% from 300 to 250. The fee for a new individual residential mortgage loan originator license is decreased 6.7% from $150 to $140, and the fee for a renewal license is decreased 16.7% from $60 to $50. The proposed reductions will in effect refund some of the generated excess to the industry and assist the department in collecting only the amount of mortgage revenue sufficient to cover the total cost of the industry's regulation. For thrift revenues, we're budgeting to collect 44.5% more than budgeted in prior year due to significant growth in assets under our regulation during the second half of fiscal year 2020. In fiscal year 2021, we have budgeted to collect $3.8 million in assessments based on the lower of risk-weighted or total assets and assessed at 70% of our approved maximum rates. The assessments will be collected throughout the year in 4 equal installments. The collected thrift revenues will be sufficient to cover the total cost of this industry's regulation. For penalties, as always, we're budgeting $0 so that no part of our operating budget hinges on the amount of assessed and collected penalties. For miscellaneous revenues, we are budgeting a lower than prior year due to the depositary interest we usually receive from safekeeping trust. So the lower interest rates, we are expecting to collect less. Moving on to expenditures, our total personnel cost category represents 90.3% of the total expenditure budget and is 27.6% higher than the budget approved for fiscal year 20. The increase is due primarily to adding 8 new positions to the Thrift Division for the development of the large financial institution program, 7 financial examiners, and 1 administrative support position, as well as 1 additional administrative position in the operations division, total of 9 positions. The budget provides for merit increases, promotions, and equity adjustments for multiple employees in an effort to reward good performance, remain competitive with state and federal counterparts, and encourage staff retention. The stability of our staff benefits the industry in both retained knowledge of departmental statutes, rules and procedures, and also of specific regulated entities and their management. In the travel category, we're budgeting for a decrease of 38.1% than prior year's budget. Based on guidance from FDIC, we're estimating the travel will not resume before January 2021, and when it does, it will be at a reduced rate compared to prior years. The amount budgeted for professional fees and services is 32% higher than prior year's budget due to increased amount for information technology consulting fees related to CAPS and cybersecurity, as well as professional fees for the SUNSET compliance review of the department. We have budgeted for a decrease in the office utilities based on reduced presence in the Austin office. And we also are budgeting for reduction in rental expenditures, the events we usually hold in the fall for which we need to rent space and audio video equipment will be held virtually this year due to COVID. As a result of COVID, also to enable staff to perform effectively and efficiently remotely, we had to update some business processes and utilize additional communication tools. Amounts of communication expenses are budgeted 27% higher than the prior year. We have included amounts for video conferencing and increased internet bandwidth. This year, as every session year, also included in the total are expenditures for telecom, which is an electronic subscription for legislative information services. The total for information technology costs are almost identical as last year. They include amounts for updated software products to enable teleworking and secure transmission of information between the department and regulated entities, as well as amounts for website updates, managed network services, and small peripherals. All office staff and thrift examiners' computers were replaced in fiscal year 20, so we're not budgeting for significant outlays for scheduled equipment replacements in fiscal year 21. In the miscellaneous operating expenditures category, we're budgeting 11.1% lower than last year. The decrease is due to lower budgeted amounts for temporary work. I will say that at the end of fiscal year 21, we are budgeting for a deficit of $690,000 that will be covered by existing cash reserves. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thanks, Antonia. Next, can we hear from Commissioner Pettijohn?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Our proposed budget is presented for you on page 87 and 88, and the OCCC respectfully presents its proposed budget at $8,843,678 for fiscal year 21. This budget request supports 82 FTEs, which is a decrease of 5 FTEs from fiscal year 2020. While the proposed budget reflects an increase in revenue of 48%, it's important to remember what I spoke about earlier, that the motor vehicle sales finance revenue, the renewal was deferred into FY21, so that it was not collected in FY20, so that's the difference in the revenue. Expenditures in the proposed budget are decreasing by 1.7% from fiscal year 2020. COVID-19, of course, makes these projections especially challenging in the upcoming fiscal year because none of our crystal balls are exactly perfect about what's going to happen. For we do have key budget drivers for proposed fiscal year 21 that continue to be some of the budget drivers we've had, you know, across our industry, but anticipating changes in our industry markets, again, COVID-19 makes that a little bit difficult to anticipate, but we certainly try to look through some changes in the industry markets, staffing stability and retention, our examination travel requirements, and our IT and cybersecurity needs. As a self-directed semi-independent agency, we take great care to ensure that we have proper stewardship of our resources and that we manage our expenditures within our available revenues to ensure that we remain self-funding and self-leveling. I want to speak just a few minutes about changes in the industry markets. Although we have not yet seen, and maybe yet is maybe the wrong word, but there have not been significant decreases in licensing and registration total numbers in our regulated industries in recent months. The FY21 budget does project a slight drop off in some of our industry groups just due to the current economic factors. We hope that doesn't come to pass, but we thought it best to anticipate that it might have some slight drop off. This is certainly reflected in our modest projections on the volume of incoming applications and minimally lower renewal rates for certain categories of business licenses. As we've adjusted to the market and adjusted to the pandemic, the examination and supervision department has been working to revamp our process for conducting examinations, especially enabling more remote processing. Given the current economic conditions and some attrition that we've been experiencing, the budget proposal would eliminate three financial examiner positions for the FY21 year. Really, and I want to say the FY21 year only is all we're believing will be impacted at this point, but we would delay filling those positions, some of those positions. Travel expenses, of course, have been impacted as well with a forecast decline of 18% travel. Modeling on our proposed budget supports a performance target of about 2,500 compliance examinations, which is down from our target of 4,000 in fiscal year 20. And that's really primarily due to the difficulty in traveling and conducting examinations due to the pandemic. Our exams today require an investment of more time and resources. They just take longer, so consequently, we really need to reset our target for exam completion. But we have seen some consolidation of some duties throughout the agency, and it's led to better functional shared workloads, I think, that have helped make us more efficient during this process as well. So we've learned some important lessons, and this budget is based upon carrying forward some of those efficiencies as well. So at this point, I'd like to call upon Moran Diamond, Director of Licensing and Finance, to continue with presentation of our proposed budget.
Thank you, Commissioner. Moran Diamond, Director of Licensing and Finance for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. I will start with staffing stability and retention. The proposed budget will provide a staffing level that allows the OCCC to effectively and efficiently regulate industry groups while retaining staff. Salaries and benefits make up 78% of the proposed budget expenditures, and it proposes promotions and competitive actions throughout the agency. The proposed budget includes funds for professional development and employee training to aid with retention of high-performing employees. Information technologies next. The proposed budget funds the operations and maintenance for the cloud-based regulatory platform ALEX, and also includes additional development work to further enhance and refine ALEX. It includes funds for the CAPS transition and development of an interface for revenue from ALEX. The budget also supports additional investments in cybersecurity, including a data loss prevention solution and upgrades and support for applications used across the agency. Next, communication. In the communication group, the proposal includes increased costs over the current budget to support enhanced bandwidth to service the demand for remote processing, as well as increased needs for VPN access and virtual meeting solutions. Further key items in the expenditure budget include travel expenditures for in-state examination travel are estimated at $633,000, an overall 18.4% decrease from fiscal year 20. This includes realistic estimates for financial examiners transitioning travel schedules during COVID-19, with a return to normal scheduling in approximately the third quarter of fiscal year 21. Professional fees. The proposed budget includes normal estimates for legal services payable to the Attorney General and the State Office of Administrative Hearings and accounting services with the projected internal auditing costs. Fiscal year 21 will be the year where the OCCC has an additional audit for the endowment fund, so the accounting costs for fiscal year 21 show an increase in the odd-numbered years. Miscellaneous operating expenses are budgeted at approximately the same level as the fiscal year 20 budget. Larger items within this classification include online payment fees, temporary staffing services, insurance premiums, and the assessment from the comptroller related to the statewide allocation of certain costs. Now to the fund balance. The budget proposes a deficit of revenues over expenditures with an intentional effect of funding some of the budget from the agency's reserves. The agency anticipates about 5 months of liquidity for operating expenses at the end of fiscal year 20, and a little more than 4 months of liquidity for operating expenses at the end of fiscal year 21. Now on to the effects on the industries. As we have proposed this budget, we have carefully evaluated the impact of the budget on the regulated industries and the revenue required through licensee assessments. The proposed budget anticipates deeper discounts than fiscal year 20 from the maximum assessment rates. Additionally, fiscal year 21 will be the first year motor vehicle sales finance licenses will renew in October. To mention a few discount rates, we propose a discount of 50% for mortgage loan originators, a discount of 25% for pawn shop licenses, and an average of a 22.5% discount for motor vehicle sales finance licenses. Again, these are all higher discounts in fiscal year 21 than fiscal year 20. That concludes my explanation and remarks, and I will turn it back to Commissioner Pettyjohn.
Thank you, Miranda. So just a few summary remarks. I just want to mention about the process. We did follow our defined process, which is a very interactive process with all of our departments. I really want to thank the staff for their good work and really hard work on this budget, particularly, Miranda and the accounting department spent a significant period of time running models, trying to ensure that we were putting forth the best budget possible that we feel like we can support and adhere to. We obviously had the budget hearing, and we certainly appreciated the participation and attendance of many at the budget hearing. We did receive 4 letters of support from the trade organizations, and those were provided to a copy of those were provided to the Finance Commission yesterday, I believe, and those are from the Texas Consumer Credit Coalition, the Texas Consumer Finance Association, the Texas Property Tax Lien Holders Association, and the Consumer Services Alliance of Texas. And so we very much appreciate those letters of support and working with the trades to ensure that we provide a budget that can be supported, that stays within our revenues, that's fairly allocated amongst the industry to support their fair share of the regulation of their industry. And with that, we will stop, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, hearing none, Commissioner Cooper, can you give us the budget for the Department of Banking?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Department of Banking's budget starts on page 89. I'm going to make a few opening comments. You had previously heard from the other two agencies the comments about our self-directed semi-independent status. I want to acknowledge that status and say that we certainly appreciate the legislature giving us this status, and we respect it, and we try to operate daily in a manner to live up to this privilege. With all the economic issues facing our state and our country right now, I will say that this budget process has been extremely difficult. I appreciate the hard work that our staff has done in coming up with this. We do continue to experience banks converting to our charter, and our assets under supervision have increased for 8 consecutive years. We project a 10% increase in 2021. I believe that we have developed a budget that will allow us to adequately do our job to protect the citizens of Texas while working with our regulated entities during these trying times. You will note in the packet that we have letters of support from the Independent Bankers Association of Texas and the Texas Bankers Association, and we certainly appreciate their support. Now I'd like to ask Sammy Chadley, our Director of Administrative Services, to provide more detail.
Good morning, Sammy Chadley, Department of Banking. In our budget process, each divisional area was tasked with creating their budget using historical, current, and forecast information and incorporating the strategic planning initiatives and agency priorities developed for 2021. Cost centers for each industry were reviewed to make sure each industry is covering its related costs. This proposed budget is based on the department conducting 836 examinations, processing 298 applications, notices and filings, and resolving 225 complaints. Our proposed 2021 budget has revenues projected at $29.8 million, which does not include $5.1 million in bank assessments that are not expected to be assessed to operate the department. These assessment reductions will allow the agency to cover expected expenditures of $29.8 million with no additional contribution to our cash balance in FY 2021. Assessments are approximately 90% of our revenues, and our revenue projections include the following. Bank assets growth of approximately 9.7%, mostly due to 4 conversions in 2020, as well as growth in merger activity. Normal level of problem banks. Corporate activity decreasing almost 10% due to anticipated reduction in bank application filings. Limited overall revenue increase for non-depository supervision, and decreased projected earnings of funds held at the state treasury, basically our interest, earned interest. In our budget review process, and in accordance with 7 TAC 336E, we have determined that our current assessments for the bank and trust area will cover this budget request. Next, our personnel costs are our major expenditure category and accounts for most of the budget increase. Total personnel costs are estimated to be $26.1 million, including benefits of $6 million and other personnel costs of $0.6 million. Personnel costs account for 88% of the proposed budget request. The other personnel cost line item, includes lump sum payments for tenured employees and longevity. A projected 28.3% of salaries in this budget proposal was used for benefits, and then we added the 1.5% mandated by the legislature for health care and retirement contributions. The 2021 proposed budget includes 16 vacancies that are staggered and filled throughout the year. Overall, our 2021 budget expenditures increased by 0.79%, less than 1% over the 2020 budget. Excluding salary increases for the 2021 budget, we come up with a negative 2.3% as compared to 2020. Our staffing increased by 4 positions from 194 to 198. This increase includes 2 FTEs to assist with the centralized accounting and payroll personnel system migration and 2 financial examiners related to conversions. This proposed budget includes salary increases for financial examiner 7s to be competitive with the FDIC, by reducing the compensation gap to reach 95% of the FDIC levels. We believe these increases are necessary to retain qualified staff, remain competitive, will help postpone retirements while we continue to train our less tenured staff. Other items in other expenditures include travel, which is at $1.4 million and is 4.7% of total expenses. Professional fees, which include part-time contractor for the financial systems migration caps, and potential charges for Sunset Advisory Commission follow-up work. Also, under information technology, the increase is related to IT system migration to cloud and managed services. Finally, our cash position. This year, we did not utilize, in 2020, we did not utilize $5.9 million in available bank and trust assessments and $735,000 in non-depository assessments as we continuously manage our cash balance growth for compliance with liquidity policy guidelines. Our anticipated unreserved cash balance for fiscal year 2020 is estimated to be approximately $5.9 million, or roughly 2.4 to 2.5 months of the 2021 budget. The 2021 budget keeps unreserved cash within 2 to 6 months per the liquidity policy guidelines just mentioned. With this budget, the agency can carry, we believe this agency can carry out its mission, meet performance standards, maintain a competitive salary structure, and meet our standards of service. And finally, I want to thank Commissioner Cooper, Wendy Rodriguez, and Krishna Jones for all their help and guidance. That concludes my presentation.
Madam Chair, that's all from the Texas Department of Banking. If y'all have any questions.
Madam Chairman, this is Larry. It was a good presentation. I understood it all, but I was having a little trouble with the audio, and this may have been addressed. I just have a quick question. If you could comment on the penalties on how that is budgeted for the next year. I noticed, what was budgeted in 2020, and obviously there were penalties assessed, and you're way over that. How do you look at that?
I'm sorry, this is Sammy Chadley. For bank and trust, there are no penalties budgeted, but for non-depository supervision, the penalties are based on what is in the pipeline based on our legal division's assessment and our non-depository supervision division assessment. So these are basically expected collected penalties that are in the pipeline.
So okay. Larry, maybe said in another way, Charles Cooper here. Normally we wouldn't budget for these, but since we know these are things that are already in process and close to conclusion, so we feel like that money's already going to be there. So we felt like we needed to recognize it in the budget.
Yeah, thank you. That makes total sense. Appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, if there's no other questions, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2021 operating budget?
Madam Chair, this is Wendy Rodriguez. We have an audience member who would like to make a comment.
Okay.
Mr. Chris Furlow, you may go ahead.
All right. Good morning, everybody. And Madam Chair, I hope this is appropriate at this time, but just wanted to comment before y'all move forward that we're really blessed in the state of Texas to have two prudently managed regulatory agencies for our state chartered banks and for our state savings banks. DOB and DSML have been very respectful and grateful for their SDSI status, and that's certainly reflected in the budgets. They've been thoughtfully prepared with flexibility in mind, particularly given this current situation that we're in from an economic standpoint. And we'll talk about this as well in the Finance Commission meeting itself, but, looking at the staffing needs that they've had, and particularly IT security needs that the pandemic has generated, is really important. So the Texas Bankers Association fully supports both of these budgets, and we're just grateful for the opportunity to weigh in. So thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Any other comments, Wendy, or is that?
We have one additional comment. Chris Williston would like to make a comment. If he will unmute himself, he can go ahead and make comment.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity, and thank you. I want to echo the sentiments of my esteemed colleague, Mr. Furlow, at the Texas Bankers Association for the good work done by both agencies on their budget. We do know, of course, that there are challenges ahead for us as a state, and believe that these budgets adequately reflect the ability of the state regulatory agencies to address those challenges head on and prudently supervise the entities under their regulation. So I will provide more comment in the Finance Commission meeting later, but just want to publicly thank the members of this committee for the good work as well in the budget process.
Okay, thank you so much. Do I now hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2021 operating budget?
I'll make a motion, Ms. Larry.
Okay, Larry. Is there a second? Hector, thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Hearing no opposed, the motion passes. Next, we have the discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending 2020 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza, Gonzalez, and Associates. Kim?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Kim Lopez-Gonzalez with Garza, Gonzalez, and Associates. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have what you have before you included in your packet on pages 93 through 112 of the board packet. Is the annual internal audit report for the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending for fiscal year 2020. Also on this call is Cheryl Sacedo and Chica Cherry. Both of these individuals are senior auditors who played an important role completing all the reports that we will be presenting to you this morning. Before I get into the details for the savings and mortgage lending, I just wanted to make some general comments that apply to all audits that were completed and our tasks that we performed for fiscal year 2020 for all agencies. We had full cooperation from all agencies. As you know, during this time of the audit of the COVID pandemic, our travel is limited. The offices there at the Finance Commission are closed. So all audits and tasks were performed remotely. I want to say that didn't hinder any of the progress. We were able to perform the audits efficiently. Any information that we requested was provided electronically. We did have more video and audio conferences than usual since we didn't have any face-to-face contact, but we were able to perform audits efficiently and performed remotely. The Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending Report, Annual Internal Audit Report, as I indicated before, is found in 93 through 112 of the board packet. This annual report is required in accordance with the Internal Auditing Act, and the form and content of this report is as provided by the State Auditor's Office. The State Auditor's Office is the body that has been given the responsibility for providing such guidelines to state agencies to comply with the Texas Internal Auditing Act. On page 94 of your report, of the SML report. This is the table of contents, and just wanted to point something out to you on the table of contents. The minimum requirements for inclusion as required by the FAO's guidelines are items 1 through 4 in this report, Roman numerals number 1 through 4, as you can see on the table of contents. In addition to that, items 7 through 9. So those are the minimum requirements as required by the guidelines to comply with the internal auditing guidelines. And the rest of the information is included for your purposes as either you requested as such that the attachment for the history of areas audited. This is something that has been requested by the Finance Commission, by the Audit Committee, to be included in each of these annual internal audit reports. In addition to that, there is some other information that is included in here, which is the audit of the records management audit. The audit of the records management program, sorry. That is the audit that was performed during fiscal year 2020 in accordance with the approved internal audit plan, which was dated April 2nd, 2020, and approved by you, the Audit Committee, and the Finance Commission at a meeting on April 17, 2020. Page 95 of your report is our report to you, the Finance Commission and Audit Committee members, indicating that we performed the audit of the records management area as for the 9 months ended May 31st, 2020. It also goes on to indicate that we did have a couple of observations to report as a result of the audit. And in addition to that, that the report also meets the requirements as required by the the Texas Internal Audit Annual Report requirements. If there was any follow-up to perform, we would have done that at this time. However, the follow-up that I'm relating, that I am referring to, would be any follow-up related to internal audit. That would be in the scope of the audit plan that was prepared and approved in April 2020. I know that you are aware that there are other audits that are performed, other reviews that are performed by other bodies, such as SORM, such as the Sunset Commission, and so on and so forth. However, that is not in our scope to follow up on unless it is requested by you, the Finance Commission or Audit Committee, to do so. We know that staff does self-report back to you at your meeting. And so if that was something that you would request us to do to follow up on any self-reporting status for us to look at any compliance with that, we surely could do that as well as part of our internal audit function. In accordance with the Internal Auditing Act, this report is required to be submitted to the SAO, the LBB, and the Governor's Office by November 1st of each year. It is no longer required as of 1st, 2019 to be submitted to the Sunset Commission. So as I indicated before in the table of contents, this report includes a lot of information. But to get into the details of the records management area, we do provide you some background on pages 101 through 103 of the whole records management program. It is a state requirement that all state agencies do have a record management program in place and that they comply with various requirements of that program as set forth by the Texas State Libraries and Archives Commission. And one of the significant items that should be in the records retention schedule. And so our role here was to ensure compliance with those state laws and ensure compliance with the established records retention schedule. There were two observations made, and management's responses are included, which are in pages 108 to 109 of your report. If you would like to look at those, I'm sure that you have already looked at those observations and our recommendations. Now, they are observations because they're more for items that we identified where we are recommending for more for enhancement of the internal controls, not necessarily that there was anything done incorrectly or not in accordance with with the state requirements. The first one has to do with what we're recommending is that a quality control review process be put in place so that there is someone other than the records management office that is reviewing for ensuring that dates of inactive or dates for such records are in accordance with the records retention schedule to ensure that they are kept in accordance with the retention period. The management's response is in there, and on page 5 of your packet, I know that there is a self-reported self-reported status that indicated that that was completed, that the review process has been updated to ensure that a staff member other than the records management officer will be conducting some reviews. We will follow up on this comment and this observation here as part of our 2021 follow-up to ensure that what management has indicated is occurring. The second observation is found on page 109 of your report, and this is for the records retention period for records stored at the Texas State Library and Archives Commission State Records Center, that the retention periods are in accordance with the policies and procedures for SML. To ensure that, because right now the retention period in TexLink, which is the applicant there at the State Record Center, is different from what is required by the record retention schedule. So we are recommending that SML contact TSLAC to see that retention period in their system to be in alignment with the record schedule.
and the records management procedures as put in place by SML. And I believe SML's self-reported status indicated that it is scheduled to cease lapse, and they're hoping that that can be changed so that it can be more efficient for the risk management officer to keep track of those disposition dates. In addition to those two observations, as I indicated before, the remaining information on pages one, on page 110 is a question that's required by the State Auditor's Office guidelines. I'd like for you just to know on page 110, the last item there, item number 9, proposed internal audit plan for fiscal year 21. This is just a proposed internal audit plan since we have not performed the risk assessment for fiscal year 2021. So if we were to look at the risk assessment that was performed for 2020, we would be recommending that the payroll and human resources area be audited as part of the internal auditing plan for next year. However, once we perform the risk assessment, that could change based on everything that has changed, that has occurred during the year from the last time we performed the risk assessment. In addition to that, page 112, as I indicated before, this is the history of area expenses. This is something that some of the members had requested before that this be included in the annual report for your purposes, so that you could see what areas have been reviewed, audited, not only by the internal auditors, but other bodies. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have related to the savings and mortgage lending. Cheryl Salcedo is the person that did work very closely with Antonia, and I'd like to thank Antonia, too, for her time that she spent in facilitating the audit and providing all the information. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any questions? All right, hearing none, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending's 2020 annual internal audit report as prepared and presented by Garza, Gonzalez, and Associates?
This is Hector Sabin, so moved.
Okay, Hector, I'll second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, hearing there's no opposed, the ayes have it, and the motion passes. Next, we have the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Officer of Consumer Credit Commissioner's 2020 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza and Gonzalez and Associates. Tim, back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner's Annual Internal Audit Report for fiscal year 2020 is found on pages 113 through 134 of your packet. On page 114, the table of contents, very similar to the SML table of contents. And again, the records management area was the area approved for audit for fiscal year 2020. If you'll recall, back in April of 2020, when we were presenting the audit plan, the records management program area was the only area in both in the SML and OCC's audit areas of audit history of areas audited that had not been reviewed by anybody for over 10 years. So this was the area recommended for audit for the two agencies. Pages 120 to 123 of the report, this a background of the records management program at OCCC is provided. In addition to that, pages 124 to 126, it is the inclusion of one comment related to our audit and one observation. In addition to that, there was some follow-up to be performed from the internal audit the prior year internal audit that was performed by your predecessor auditor that we performed follow-up for. If you wouldn't mind going to pages 128 to 129, just to discuss some of the comment on the observations, just so I could summarize that for you. The comment on page 128 is related to records disposition. This comment relates to some records being destroyed prior to their retention period. And so we did make a recommendation here. And management's responses is included in here, which is in accordance with their self-reported status that is on page 6 in your packet. So the new procedures and training will be implemented by October 1st, 2020. That is management's response to the recommendation. In addition to that, there was one observation just related to the process for the imaging of the records, and management's response is included on page 129, and they will retrain staff related to this to ensure that the process is followed and that the procedures are consistently followed. And they also indicate here that the training will occur by October 1st of 2020. Included in the report on pages 130 to 131 is the follow-up that was for prior year internal audits. There were a total of 9 follow-up items, most of them related to the IT change management program. But based on those 9 follow-up items, 5 have been fully implemented, 3 of them are substantially implemented, and in one case, which on page 131, the agency has decided that they evaluated the recommendation and concluded that it was impractical to implement the recommendation. So one of them does have a status of not implemented. In addition to that, on page 132, as for SML, it is required that there is an internal audit plan for fiscal year 2021. Again, this is a proposed internal audit plan using the risk assessment for fiscal year 2020. Using that, we would, if we were using the 2020 risk assessment, the audit for 2021 would be related to the fiscal division. And we are going to make one update to this report before, I know it's a final report, but I realized that we did not include the TIFI fund investment portfolio administration as part of the 2021 audits or reviews to be performed as part of the 2021 internal audit that we will be conducting. So we will be adding that to that proposed internal audit plan. That is something that is required to be done every 2 years, and it was done in 2019. So it is required to be done again in 2021. So we will be adding that to the proposed internal audit plan for fiscal year 2020. And Chica Cherry is also on the line. She is the one that did work very closely with OCC staff, mainly Commissioner Pettyjohn and Nancy Ebert. So at this time, if you have any questions or comments, we'd be happy to try to address them.
Okay, hearing no comments, can I get a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner's 2020 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates?
This is Larry. I make a motion.
Okay, Larry. I'll second. Okay, Hector, I'll give that one to you. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, hearing no opposed, the ayes have it, and the motion passes. Next, we have discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Texas Department of Banking's Revenue Accounting Process Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates. Kim, keep going.
Thank you. The internal audit report on the revenue accounting process can be found on pages 135 through 150 of your packet. This is the first audit that we began shortly after the audit plan was approved. Our audit field work began on April 23rd. The audit plan was approved on April 19th. So we hit the ground running with this one, and that is the reason why a separate report has been issued for this area. As a matter of fact, we were hoping to be able to present to you this in June, but we fell short a couple of days. I believe the draft report was completed on June 12th. So I realize that you need the report well in advance of your meeting. So it did not meet the date to be June meeting, but that is the reason why you have a separate report for this revenue accounting process rather than it being included in the annual report that we will present here in a little while. But this report on the revenue accounting process on page 137, this is our report to you, indicating that we did perform a review of the revenue accounting process as it relates to the assessment, collection, and accounting for various fees, fines, penalties, and restitution. for the 7 months ended March 31st, 2020. Our background, our procedures, and everything related to the audit is included in the rest of the body of this report. I'd like to share with you that we do not have any comments or observations to report as a result of our audit. If you have any questions or comments, Chica Cherry is the auditor that worked very closely with Sammy Chanty on this audit, and we'd be happy to address those comments at this time.
Okay, hearing no comments, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Texas Department of Banking's Revenue Accounting Process Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates?
I'll make a motion. This is Larry.
Okay, Larry, I'll second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. The ayes have it and the motion passes. Finally, we have the discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Texas Department of Banking's 2020 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates. Sam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your packet on pages 151 to 171 is the Annual Internal Audit Report for the Texas Department of Banking. Included in this report is not only the requirement for the compliance with the Texas Internal Auditing Act as required by the State Auditor's Office guidelines, but also the audit of the imaging and records management area. I'd like to thank Bill Lena for his role in this. He was able to facilitate the audit and provide all information in a timely manner. In addition, for inclusion of that audit, we also did perform a follow-up of outstanding internal audit comments from the predecessor auditor. And Wendy and Sammy Chadley were very helpful in facilitating that part of the review. On page 153 of the audit report, we have our letter to you indicating that we did perform a audit of the records management area, the imaging and records management area for the 8 months ended April 30th, 2020, and that we also did perform the follow-up of the prior year internal audit comments. The comments related to the imaging and records management audit can be found on page 165 of your report. There were two comments. The records retention period is the first comment here. Document manager is the system used to image records by DOB. And the comment here is just related to the records retention period as listed in the document manager versus the records retention schedule. We did find some instances where those were not in alignment, and management's responses have been included in here. They indicate that additional training has already been provided and that this error should not occur again. That is the management's response, and that also is in what they have reported to you in their status at page 13 of your board packet. In addition to that, there's a second comment related to the archival records. So there are certain records in the records retention schedule, certain state records that are required to be archived and submitted to TSLAC for their review to be preserved there until they decide that they are no longer needed. This currently is not done by DOB because it is, I guess they have, management does have a different understanding of archival or consideration of some records. They have reached out to TSLAC to see if their understanding is that all records really are archival, so that's why they don't submit them to TSLAC. They pretty much preserve them there at DOB. So, They are trying to get a reading from TSLAD to see if they agree with that. And upon that receipt of that recommendation from TSLAD, they will follow whatever TSLAD their decision on that. In addition to those two comments, we do have some follow-up that was performed, which is on pages 166 and 167 of the report. There were five follow-up items. And I believe all these are related to the change management, the IT controls that were tested last year by the predecessor auditor. There were five items outstanding, and based on our follow-up, there are two that are, have been fully implemented, one that is substantially implemented, and two that are ongoing. And with, in addition to that, on page 16, as with the other two agencies, we do have the proposed internal audit plan for fiscal year 2021. Again, this is based on the 2020 risk assessment, which could change as a result of the 2021 risk assessment that will be performed at a later date. And with that, either myself and or Cheryl Saucedo or both of us could answer any questions that you may have at this time.
Okay, hearing no questions, I'll make the motion that the Finance Commission approve the Texas Department of Banking's 2020 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza, Gonzalez, and Associates. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Hector? Okay, any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, hearing no opposed, the motion passes. All right. Now on page 172, we'll have the report on activities relating to the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund. Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a really brief report on page 172, just with some activity that's been going on. We have passed the first semi-annual period for the grant cycle that we're currently in, and so we've been receiving those reports and those reimbursement requests, and we're processing those, reviewing those and processing those. Coming to you in October will be an impact report that we prepare for the 2018-2019 grant cycle. So that's being prepared, will be available then. And then we will also receive the first period of the semi-annual report for 2020-2021 grant cycle. And then lastly, just want to mention we've been doing a little work on social media to try to help promote the grant program, and hopefully, you know, in preparation, we've got a while before we're ready for the 2022-2023 cycle, but we want to start, you know, getting things out, promoting, so we'll have a good round of interest for the next round of grant awards when that happens. And that concludes my report on TV.
Okay, great. There being no further business, this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned. The time is 10:02 a.m. And thank you, everybody, for your patience for this long meeting.